Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This podcast is brought to you in part by Dragon Shield. Use code PLAYTOWIN5 at the affiliate link down below for 5% off to help support the show.
Welcome to the Play to Win podcast, where we talk about winning in CEDH. I'm Cam.
I'm Dylan.
I'm Tyler.
And this week we're talking about Duskborn in CEDH.
Nope.
Morn. Duskmorn. I knew I was going to switch it up. I'm so sorry. Duskmorn in CEDH. New set, spooky cards. I'm very excited.
Me too.
This has been my most anticipated set for the whole year.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to get into what is going to end up being the smallest amount of cards in a set review that we've talked about all year.
Yeah, although the set is cool and the art is awesome and was very anticipated. Power level for CDH, I don't know that it quite matches some of the other ones, but that's okay. Not every set has to be so powerful.
And we got a lot of really good stuff recently, so I think it's okay to let the format simmer out.
Yeah, adjust to itself.
Exactly.
Without new stuff always.
Coagulate.
Sure.
Let's just jump right in. We're going to talk about the only white card that we have on the list, which is Unwanted Remake. This is a white mana instant that destroys a creature, and its controller manifests Dread. And what that means is that that player will look at the top two cards of their library and then put one of them onto the battlefield face down as a 2/2 creature and the other one in their graveyard. If that 2/2 is a creature, it can be flipped up at any time by paying its mana cost. So it's kind of like an even better manifest.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. This ability is better than manifest.
Wait, why is it better than manifest?
Because manifest doesn't let you kind of like set up your graveyard and make sure that you're putting a creature underneath. Manifest will force it to just be the top card.
Yeah. You look at two and you get to choose.
Yeah, so not only
so your
are
odds
you
of
like,
getting a creature are better.
And not only are you doing that, but you're also like fueling your Underworld Breach. Or like another kind of strategy that you're going for with your graveyard.
I like that this card's name is Unwanted Remake because one, it's like a throw to like a horror thing, which is funny. But also I feel like it itself is an unwanted remake of like Swords to Plowshare and Path to Exile. It's like basically a strictly worse version of those cards. That's definitely on purpose,
and you're
right?
Remaking their creature that they don't want you to remake.
Right.
Either.
Like I feel like the pun works on a lot of levels.
And plus it was spoiled right around the time that Beetlejuice 2 came out, which absolutely sucked ass.
So. Adam told me you saw it and it was terrible.
It was so fucking bad. It had nothing
to
do with
it. That's so upsetting. I really want to see that too, but not good.
Yeah.
Was it just too corny?
No. Like I'm here for the like practical effects, very goofy Beetlejuice humor. Like that's what you're there for. But it spends all of its time being like a mother-daughter or like family trauma, like live action drama.
Interesting.
And then only like a third of the movie at most is actual Beetlejuice stuff. And there are just like these stray threads of plot lines that like just never go anywhere, like Beetlejuice's ex-wife and stuff that like are not central to the plot at all and don't serve any function. It's just like filler. It's not good.
Hey, honestly, what you're saying makes me want to see it more because I'm hoping it gets to the threshold of being so bad it gets good again. But I feel like what you're saying is it cuts right before that. It's not quite too bad to be good again.
It's not. And it's okay. Like 45 minutes of not Beetlejuice stuff, of just like live action, like okay. Family, like Lydia's daughter. And you're just like, what are we doing here?
I just watched the original Beetlejuice last night. And one, it's still incredible classic. But honestly, it's kind of similar-ish in that there's not a ton of actual Beetlejuice. He's like hinted at a lot, but he's not really in the movie a ton, but the other parts kind of allude to him a lot more than maybe this one does. I don't know. I'm excited to see that one nonetheless.
It's been 20 years since I've seen Beetlejuice. I remember him being weird. I remember Alec Baldwin looking really young.
But even still, he kind of looked like an old young guy. Like even at the time, I still feel like he looked, like not compared to him now, but he still looked kind of like an old guy.
And then I remember the iconic song at the very end when she's floating in the air. Okay, I believe you. Oh, we're going to get copywritten stricken now.
This card's all right.
This card is all right. Yeah.
I give it a, realistically, it's not all right. It's a one. I think maybe mono white decks will play it. Outside of that, I don't know that you would. There's just like too many other things that are, in my opinion, strictly better than this.
I think it's raising the profile of white casual removal a lot to have a third great option of single white, but I think for CEDH it probably doesn't matter. And I'm still going to give it a zero because I'm taking out my Beetlejuice anger on this card.
A creature is like way much of a bigger downside for you to be giving away than a land for someone else or some life.
And especially like it's card selection almost. They get to try to make it a creature. They get something in their graveyard, which might help them even more.
What if they find something better than what you get rid of.
Too much negative.
Yeah, I think it is a little bit too much of a downside. So maybe even mono white CEDH decks might want it, but there's so many white removal spells that are at such a cheap cost that for two mana, get rid of like two other different card types and give away maps, which fucking suck.
Honestly, Dispatch, that was the card we were talking about the other day. If you have Metalcraft, it just exiles a creature for no downside. If you don't have Metalcraft, it just taps it. But I feel like in CDH, it's pretty regular that, like in the right deck, like in a Teshard deck or something, you can pretty much guarantee
if
Metalcraft.
If you're playing Mox Opal, like you should be able to play Dispatch.
So I almost wonder if even that would go above this card.
What a weird takeaway that we're getting from yeah, this episode so far.
Is Dispatch playable?
New Beetlejuice sucks. Dispatch is good though.
Yeah, and also like single mana unconditional removal, like,
Cards are so good nowadays. They need to be even better to be good.
Yeah. That's a perfect quote. Cards are so good nowadays, they need to be even better to be good.
Yeah.
I completely agree.
There's nothing wrong with what I just said.
Moving on.
Let's talk about the only blue card on the list, which is...
Oh, wow.
I know, right? Yeah. So weird. This is called Get Out, another very flavorful name. This is two blue for an instant that says you can choose one. You can either counter a creature or enchantment, or you can return up to one or two target creatures and or enchantments you own to your hand. Oh, okay.
Not as good as you thought?
I thought that it was just like return
a creature
or enchantment to the owner's hand.
No, yeah. I put this one on the list because I think it's close and not because I think it's good. If this was one mana, I think we would have our creature counterspell that I'd be interested. Like a Strix Serenade type of card that I would actually want. Because if this for one blue mana could counter a creature and an enchantment and then also bounce your dockside sometimes, that's a card I'm looking at. For two mana, it's still not there, but I put it on there because this type of effect, I feel like for some reason is getting better and better and more people are interested in this type of thing for CDH, so I wanted to talk about it.
Like the what? Bouncing your dockside to your hands?
Counter a creature spell.
Stopping
Thassa's Oracle, countering a creature spell.
I mean, I think it's close in the same way, but it's just not costed effectively enough for sure.
I don't even know if like a mono blue deck would want this, like an Urza deck. I feel like there's still other options, but it's certainly another card that's super interesting for casual, I think. I don't know.
If it bounced anything, if you could bounce any, well, not even anything, but just any player's thing, I think then my eye would be looking towards this a lot more. But that second mode is a hell of a lot less flexible than like every other bounce spell that's out there, which this is not like, I can't categorize this as a bounce spell, but this is like one of these modal effects that you do get two different effects on them for one card, but I just don't think that the blue mana cost makes it good enough that like that mana cost makes this good. I'm so bad at coming up with sentences today.
0.5 for me. I'll give it a 0.5.
I'll agree with that. 0.5.
I'll give it a 4 because I'm once again rating the movie and not the card.
Oh, the movie was great.
Yeah.
Get Out was incredible.
Oh, it
was
awesome. Yeah. Okay. The song by Churches, also great. That also gets a 4.
What is that?
Churches, the band. Get Out is the name of the song.
Okay.
All right, let's move on to black. We have 4 black cards here to talk about. The first one is Demonic Council. This is one in a black for a sorcery that says, search your library for a demon card, reveal it, put it into your hand, then shuffle. And if your delirium is on, which means that if there are 4 or more card types among cards in your graveyard, instead search your library for any card and put it into your hand, then shuffle.
I don't know that this one is great because turning delirium on in CDH is kind of surprisingly hard for some reason, but this reads so close to being super good. The fact that this can sometimes just be another copy of Demonic Tutor, which is insane, with Underworld Breach lines. I don't know that this sees play unless you can also fall back on like sometimes being able to find a demon that would be good, and I don't know that there's any demons that are good besides like Razakath maybe, but you don't want that in your hand, you want it in your graveyard.
Yeah, Razakath, I don't even know how good it is anymore because like Hoarding Broodlord kind of took over as the big black thing to reanimate.
Exactly, but I know for sure that there could be a deck that could utilize this pretty well. I just don't know exactly where yet.
What I'm starting to do is every time I have Diabolic Intent and Demonic Tutor in my hand, I want to start seeing if I have Delirium to kind of figure out how good this card's going to be, because I can see it going a little bit better in like your Underworld Breach decks that are already trying to fuel your graveyard. So post-breach, this is kind of like gamble where it's just always going to get you what you want and you'll always be able to get it, but it's also at a worse rate than gamble and quite a big drawback too.
In Dargo decks and Korvold decks where you're like sacrificing a bunch of stuff and like burning through cards pretty quickly, like they have a lot of churn, this is the most likely to be close to a Demonic Tutor. So I think in those instances, it's probably worth a try. But the rest of the time, my opinion is more or less like, even though the mana costs are different, you're probably just better off with Beseech the Mirror. And I think it's kind of competing for the same slot where it's like that third good tutor, or fourth actually, after Wishclaw, I think, in most decks.
Yeah, it's between like Beseech and Grim Tutor, I feel like, are the ones that I see people go back and forth on for like that last black tutor spot. So I feel like, I guess now, depending on your deck, this card can also be included in that conversation.
We also have another card that's, and I can't remember the name right now, but it's for one green. It's a tutor for a creature. If your Delirium is on, you can put the creature in your hand. If
Traverse the Uvenwald.
Traverse the Uvenwald. If the creature's not, if Delirium's not on, you just get a land. But that card sees basically no play already. So to me, that's a sign that this card might see no play. Getting anything is much different than getting a creature, though. I agree, though. Dargo and Korvold, those are the decks that I'd be looking at first for this type of effect.
I think so, too. Yeah.
I give it a 2.5 with...
Oh, I'm sorry. Hold up. I have to post the podcast, everybody. We have to take a quick little break.
There isn't a movie based on this one, right? Demonic Council? Or not that I can think of. I mean, they're not all movie
Demonic
references.
Council. I mean, like, Hellraiser. But it's not really a council. No, yeah. I don't know. I don't think so.
Unfortunate.
Probably. But
are you
saying
we can't look at all of fiction and not find a council of demons anywhere?
Yeah. I give it a 2.5. I could be super wrong. This could be like, you know, the next Rock-Sai super tutor that I'm not seeing for some reason. But as of right now, I don't think so. So 2.5. I think certain tier 3 decks will love it.
Again, just look to see if you have Delirium when you cast your other tutors right now. And if you do, that'll help you decide on if you actually kind of want the card for your deck.
Yep, I'm with you. 2.5.
Cool, 2.5. Come back. Wrong is 2 and a black for a sorcery that says destroy target creature. If a creature is put into the graveyard this way, return it to the battlefield under your control, but sacrifice it at the beginning of your next end step.
This is a weird one.
I don't like that it's a sorcery, but this is basically a black phantasmal image for Dockside Extortionist. That's how I'm looking at this. A 3-mana phantasmal image.
It can also be like a temporary Gilded Drake if you need to take the Drannith Magistrate for a turn to cast your own commander.
What a cool use for this card. You kill someone else's Gilded Drake, you get it, but then they'll have to sacrifice that Gilded Drake while you end up with the opposition agent or Drannith Magistrate that was shutting you down.
Sure, yeah. That's great, yeah. I was thinking of it like acting like a Gilded Drake to just like destroy the Drannith and then you get the Drannith, but that is also super great.
Yeah, very good against Drakes, very good against Dockside, like, you know, all of these things. I think at 3 mana and as a sorcery, it's not necessarily going to see that much play, but I think this is a really hard one to evaluate. If I'm in black decks for the most part, other than decks that like really care about Dockside like Korvold or something, I'm probably not running this just hoping it's going to hit those great targets, because the rest of the time I think it's probably mid and worse than like normal removal for you. But in those decks, I think it might be worth a try initially.
Yeah, I feel like I can't evaluate this as a removal spell for exactly what you're saying. Like it's too bad of a rate, and sorcery speed is not where I want to be for my removal. Like I feel like I'm looking at this as a mono black way to clone something, because you're not going to be able to get long-term value out of it either. Like you can't do this on someone's Timna and expect that, oh, now my Crick's going to draw me cards. But I don't know, maybe this is still something Crick would want if it's able to copy like a Dockside.
I feel like this competes with other 3-mana stuff, like interaction like Fire Covenant or something. And like Fire Covenant is already a deck, a card that doesn't really see a ton of play. And I feel like its effect is way more than what this one would be. Just at that 3-mana rate, it's kind of hard to like compare this with like a Swords to Plowshare if you're in other decks or other like similar effects. So
yeah, and that's what makes clones good, is that they're at less than 3 mana most of the time. I think the rate's just a little bit too high for this, but definitely has a pretty high ceiling, at least.
Because of how it's worded, initially I was hoping that this kind of like smoothed out some Hoarding Broodlord lines, and it doesn't. In decks that don't have red, sometimes a Hoarding Broodlord line that can close the game is tricky, but because it has to be a creature card that goes to graveyard, you can't like saw in half for this and something else and then like use this to keep the tutors going, because you're not actually putting a creature card in the graveyard, you're putting the token that's part of the saw in half in the graveyard. So just a thought, like, you know, it seemed to me initially like this could be a Hoarding Broodlord thing, and I don't think it is.
Even if you do it before you saw in half your Broodlord, you just added an extra step to your saw in half line. So
yeah, well, I'll give it a one.
Yeah.
maybe in some low color decks, maybe.
Oh yeah, I'll give it a 1.5. I think it's a little
I looked
bit
at a lot of cards and said, oh, this could be good, and then like as I kept reading them throughout the week, I went, I don't know how good they are, but
it's worth looking at.
Like this next one, yeah, Withering Torment is I think also worth looking at. This is 2 and a black for an instant that destroys a creature or an enchantment and you lose 2 life.
Yeah, so this is Feed the Swarm updated
at instant speed
and 1 mana more,
and technically you're probably losing less life on average too.
I mean, normally sorcery speed is so difficult to actually pay removal as. Instant speed is much more interesting, but adding the extra mana, is that worth it?
Okay, so like Feed the Swarm is only getting run in like what, maybe Kirk.
Maybe Mono Black. Any, if you're playing Mono Black, I think that's kind of it.
And I think the extra mana is not worth it in most decks. In the decks that run this because they're already in Mono Black, like, they're already not planning to interact. So the fact that it can, like, stop a breach line on someone else's turn does not fucking matter. You're never, ever, like, planning to be the one that can shut off the breach line.
100%.
Yeah, I guess that is really the only upside to having this.
My only real thing is, like, if Rule of Law is big in your meta and you're on Mono Black or even Rakdos, you have no way to deal with enchantments. Maybe one way in your whole deck, which means if two Rule of Laws come in play, you just lose the game. You can't win anymore. So having more access to that in, like, decks that, like, just desperately need to get Deafening Silences, Rule of Laws off the board, it doesn't matter. They just don't have access to anything else. I think this is in the lineup, but that's a very niche, small amount of decks that are interested in that effect.
So this, I think we'll definitely see a non-zero amount of CEDH play, but I don't think the top TEDH tournaments are going to be playing this card.
I still give it a 2. I still think it's one of, like, the better cards that we've talked about, weirdly. I think it's just under Demonic Console for me.
Weirdly enough, I think this is the second best card that we've talked about so far. Yeah. It goes Demonic Console, Withering Torment, and then Unwanted Remake.
Yeah, that sounds right.
I think it's about on par with Unwanted Remake, but I'm going to give it a 1.5.
And these cards are all also, like, awesome for just a casual commander because they look like very powerful cards, but they have much more of a restriction and a little bit worse. So I feel like that is, like, the recipe of good, fun casual cards. I'm also super excited to play this one in my casual Vilas deck because losing the 2 life means with Vilas out, I draw cards.
Oh, and,
it's like,
and then having a way to deal with an enchantment in your Vilas deck seems great.
Like,
yeah.
It's, like, perfect in my Vilas deck, so I'm excited about it for that reason.
People are really peeved that enchantment removal is going into black, but I actually kind of like that they're extending the color pie out a little bit. If we're making white a little bit better by adding, like, card draw to white and doing a lot more with that color, why can't we, like, extend some of these other colors that are going to fall behind if we can't?
Especially at the loss of life, Mono Black can do anything if you pay enough life to do it. Like, to me, that feels extremely Mono Black. To me, that is the essence of black cards. So I think it's great.
Yeah. Valvagoth, Terror Eater, is 6 BBB for a legendary creature, Elder Demon. It's a 9/9 with flying and lifelink. It has ward for sacrifice 3 non-land permanents, and it has 2 static abilities. If a card you didn't control would be put into an opponent's graveyard from anywhere, exile it instead. And during your turn, oh, that sucks, you may play cards exiled with Valvagoth. If you cast a spell this way, pay life equal to its mana value rather than pay its mana cost.
So we all know what's going on here, right?
No.
Oh.
What's going on? This card's ass.
Listen, do you remember the joke cards where it's like 10 Niv-Mizzets and then it has silly text?
Yeah.
This is just 5 Douthis stapled together.
Dude,
it straight up is just fucking 5 Douthi Voidwalkers.
That's so funny.
Everyone's graveyard's getting exiled. You just pay for everything and it's basically free because it's just your life total.
Yeah, I'm never playing this card in CDH. 9 mana is just too much for this effect.
You're reanimating it or something. You're cheating.
No, you're not.
Play.
You're reanimating Broodlord.
Broodlord, like, or maybe Vilas if you need to, or Razaketh.
Yeah.
This doesn't come close.
You are. Yeah. I mean, like
someone
you,
could
you
be.
Could, yeah.
You know what I will say? Well, you know, go ahead. You have something real to say about this card.
Here's what I want to say. Even in the Master of Keys, which I'll be playing for our gameplay for this set, which does a ton of milling and, like, cares about all this stuff, it's not even appealing there. Even in decks that are going to mill the crap out of your opponents, I don't think it's even appealing there. It costs too much, and there are so much better reanimate targets in CEDH that, like, I don't think this actually makes it into any deck.
It's a Bolas of Citadel for your opponent's graveyards. Which is weird. That's kind of what I was thinking of it as. But what's nice about Bolas of Citadel is that it comes into play and you can just activate it immediately. Well, not activate, but you can cast spells off the top of your library immediately. What happens with Valvagoth is you cheat him into play and you go, great, pass the turn, and then you casts good spells so that I can have them on my next turn, please.
And the stuff that's already in their graveyard isn't doing anything.
Yeah.
So this is 3 times the cost
of
Mnemonic Betrayal.
If this is like when it entered, you exile everything, you can cast it, and then after, then we're talking.
That would be cool.
Then we're talking about it.
Yeah, this is not Mnemonic Betrayal.
So this is a 0, maybe.
Yeah, 0.
And this was
You want to give it a something higher than
I want to give it a 0.5 because I like things that look
a 0.666 because it's a demon.
Ooh, yeah. Seed moths are cool.
I was thinking about it in my casual Vilas deck, although Vilas currently only runs Liliana's demons, but I was thinking about breaking the rule for this one and start running some other demons because the life loss thing works really well with Vilas, but
it's just super fucking cool too.
Yeah, it's super fucking cool. The art's awesome and it looks cool.
Oh, we should say one more thing about this card. This is a fucking crazy ward cost. Sacrifice 3 non-land permanents. That is so high.
Yeah, that's X-proof.
Oh my God.
That's big. basically
that's hex-proof. Just hex-proof.
Yeah. Everything else I have to say about this card's negative, so let's pass. Next card is FOMO, the fear of missing out. This is one in a red for an enchantment creature that's a nightmare. It's a 2/3, and when it enters, you discard a card and then draw a card. And if you're delirious, I got it this time, whenever fear of missing out attacks for the first time each turn, if there are four or more card types among cards in your graveyard, untap target creature. After this phase, there is an additional combat phase.
Yeah, this is kind of a Kiki Jiki combo piece, sort of. You have to be delirious.
And you have to stop your loop at some point or else you'll draw through your deck.
Right, each new token will be able to untap Kiki Jiki. Say you get this off early and say you have 80 cards left in your library. If you do this 80 times, or 79, you have 160 damage. That should be roughly enough to kill the table, right?
That'll be way more than enough at that point.
If the game goes super long, maybe this becomes less more difficult to do, but...
The only time that I could see that going wrong is if your Najeela opponent has gained a bunch of life off of a huge attack, but how often does that even happen?
I'm still not sure if that's actually good enough. This doesn't work with any of the lines that traditionally make Kiki Jiki super well good, at least from what I know. I'm not sure. I don't know if there's like a birthing pod line or some type of line that you can like chain stuff together.
No, I think it's more like if you want a cheaper combat celebrant that would work with Kiki Jiki, I think this is kind of it. A lot of the other Kiki Jiki pieces cost 3 mana. Yeah. So having a Kiki Jiki piece under 3 mana, I think is kind of handy.
I think this is the cheapest one we've ever got, I think.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. This is the cheapest one we've ever gotten.
For the extra combat effects.
Yeah, for the extra combat effects.
Well, not and that combos with
Kiki specifically.
Yeah.
Winota, maybe? Winota wants this?
I would say because she played combat celebrant, I think she would want this too.
You're missing one, though, and I think it's a different niche than Kiki Jiki lines. I think the Timna Jeska deck that I run might try this, and it's because it currently runs Inti, which is a one and a red, and Inti is primarily a discard outlet when it attacks, but it also makes something bigger and replaces that card that you discard by exiling the top two cards of your library, or maybe it's just one, and you can play it this turn. So because it does the rummage and replaces that effect as well, but also offers an extra combat, which is something that Timna decks probably want most of the time, I think there's a chance that I try this over Inti. So if you are in one of the very few Timna decks that runs Inti, I think this is worth taking a look at as a replacement that might do more.
Yeah, that's interesting. I did think about it for Blood Pot a little bit. It kind of works. The discard, I can't really benefit it as much, but I'm already playing Kiki Jiki, and it can kind of help with, like you said, extra combats with Timna, which can be nice. I'm not sure.
Does Swan Song being able to counter it make it worse?
Interesting.
How big of an impact is it that like there's enchantment removal, like Biseiju can hit this, so if you are trying to combo, there's a lot more interaction that can stop
no
you.
One's fucking countering the spell unless there's already a Kiki Jika in your battlefield.
Well, so like if they know it's part of your win condition, if I'm not countering it in Timna Jeska, but in Winota, I might consider countering it if I'm that far behind.
Something to consider. I think that's kind of rare. They'll probably want to save their Swan Song for something better than the first half of a combo
piece. I guess
it's
more like if they're comboing off and they have Biseiju or a Nature's Claim. I think that's more of a likely scenario that will happen.
This is another one that's like close. I feel like it's like these other cards where it looks sort of like a CDH card, so I think it's close. I still think it's probably like a 2.4. I think I like Demonic Council better.
Here we go.
It's got it. Or like what? I could give it a 2. What are the other ones? I can't remember the names of the other ones that I got.
Well, it's way worse than Demonic Council, which was a 2.5.
I was trying to give it, under Demonic Council.
So it can't be a 2.5, but it's also better than Come Back Wrong and Unwanted Remake, right?
Those are twos.
It's going to see more play than them. Yeah. We gave Unwanted Remake a 1.5, and I don't remember what we gave Come Back Wrong, so I'm changing it to a 2. Come Back Wrong got a 2. Yeah. So I think Fear of Missing Out has to be in
2.4.
Between...
I stick with 2.4.
You're going to go 2.4. I'm going to go 2.25.
Yeah.
It's like they don't realize that as soon as you use the 10th and the 100th place in the decimal that we're just doing a scale out of 1,000 now instead of a scale out of 10 where we have halves.
I think it was supposed to be a scale out of 5. I guess 10 with the halves. Okay.
Well, it's 10 if you're going by halves. Like, and now
we should just go by 5.
We have cubed the amount of points that we potentially are using.
That's what makes it cool, special, and unique.
That's what makes me fun.
I'm going to give it a 2.5.
You know what? You don't get to vote if you're going to complain about how it goes. All right. Well, let's talk about probably the best card from the set, Razorkin Needlehead. This is 2 red mana for a creature human assassin 2/2 that has first strike during your turn, and whenever an opponent draws a card, it deals 1 damage to them.
This is an Obnixilus card.
This is, every set we find one.
There's one.
But this one, a 2 mana red Ketterick Parasite, is guaranteed to be played in Obnixilus this time.
I think so.
This helps you like match the Ristic studies and stuff. I think this card is really good.
This is real card draw hate. This is not like Orcish Bowmaster that disguises creature hate as card draw hate. This is actual hating on people drawing cards.
With Obnixilus out, it's hate on people drawing cards because you match their draw because Obnixilus will trigger each
good
time.
Good point. Don't put this in like any old red deck and say, oh, my Magda deck now has draw hate and
that
has an answer to Ristic study.
That one damage is nothing. That's not going to be good at all.
No, but if you can leverage it, like in the deck that I'm playing for this week's gameplay episode, this is a great card in that deck.
What are you playing again?
The other Val'Gavoth that we haven't talked about that cares about damaging people on their turns. Like if that's something you want to do, this is another card that makes just like those Punisher Rakdos decks that we're always talking about not being good a little bit better. And again, this doesn't push it over the edge or anything, but we're getting a little bit closer.
It's a piece of the puzzle. I know for sure it'll see play in Omnixilus, which is more than I can say about some of the other cards we've talked about. So I think for that reason, I have to give it a higher rating. I think I'm just going to give it like a 3.
It is a 3.
Yeah.
It's because we know it will see play in one deck.
And that deck is a very playable CDH deck.
Yeah, and it's so good against Nadu because, Nadu doesn't draw cards. Against Adnos.
Against the best things
but
in the format.
Here into the Abyss? Fuck you. You are done. Out of here.
Take that, Hoarding Broodlord. Another reason to start running Val'Gavoth again.
There you go. Yeah, sure.
All right, let's talk about another card that gets me there. This is the Roller Crusher Ride. This is X2 and a red for a legendary enchantment that's Delirium. If you are delirious, if a source you control would deal non-combat damage to a permanent or player while there are 4 more card types in your graveyard, it deals double that damage instead. And when it enters, it deals X damage to each of up to X target creatures.
I'll let you talk about this one.
This card is bad, but it has a roller coaster on it, so it's a 5. All right. Our next card.
Wait, you didn't talk about what type of roller coaster you think this is. What's the manufacturer?
Actually, this is interesting because if you look at the original art, it's designed the way that an arrow is made. So if you know coasters like Viper at Six Flags Magic Mountain, the Loch Ness Monster at Busch Gardens Williamsburg, or the old Great American Scream Machine at Six Flags Great Adventure, those were arrow coasters. They had that kind of tubular steel track that was in that same kind of design. But after realizing that this deals damage to those who ride it, it's actually an old school Vekoma coaster, which that's a hilarious joke if you guys know your coaster manufacturers and rides that are made by these manufacturers.
They're painful to ride, I would imagine.
These old Vekomas are like, do you guys, I know you've been to Hershey. Have you been to Hershey Park?
Do you remember
the Sidewinder at Hershey Park?
I don't remember.
I haven't had a thought for the last five minutes.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't know shit about...
That's a Vekoma, and it's really bumpy, and it sucks.
I'm excited because you're excited. I remember that... Was it Thunderhawk was the wooden one that was left at Dorney when we were young?
And that one was painful. That one dealt damage.
No, I meant Hercules. That was worse.
Hercules was the worst one. Hercules was replaced by Hydra.
I was like 11, and I felt like I needed a neck brace. So like
that one dealt a lot of damage.
That one was notorious. Rough.
Yeah, roller coasters are certainly red. That makes perfect sense to me.
And this one does not deal a lot of damage, which is why it's not very good. It's Build Your Own Pyroclasm, but it's worse.
It does feel like the Red Meat Hook Massacre, even though we just had a Lord of the Rings Red Meat Hook Massacre, right? But it's a 5 because it's roller coaster, so moving on.
Yeah, that's true. If you're wondering about this alternate art that I'm looking at here and what kind of coaster it is in the alternate art, it's a train, which is fucking dumb.
It looks more like a roller coaster.
Yeah,
is that even a credit?
I guess it still has like the wheels on the side that are connecting it to the track, and that's really the only thing to me that looks like it's actual roller coaster track. The original art for Roller Crusher Ride is like true to form what a roller coaster looks like and is like the perfect card for a Thuzi.
Is there actually a difference, or are roller coasters just very exciting trains?
There is a difference. Yeah, in order to be considered a coaster,
it has to coast.
What does coast mean though?
Like gravity has to be involved in
gravity
some kind
has
of
to
a
be
way.
Involved.
Yeah.
Okay.
There are things that kind of break the rule that are called power roller coasters. My rule of thumb is if it's on the roller coaster database, then it's considered a roller coaster. That's what I look for.
With the equivalent of the CDH database.
Yeah, but it's all the roller coasters with their stats and the parks that they're at and who made
their
them.
Their stats is the funniest thing.
Just like put a corkscrew in on one of their
Say no, that would not make it a roller coaster then, no.
So you're saying if it was just a regular train, but there was just one little loop?
A corkscrew.
Yeah, like they just like chain, like the New York City subway, just for some reason it goes loops and then it comes back down. That's not a roller coaster though?
Yeah.
I don't know if they would define that as a roller coaster. I don't know.
It has to be a ride. It has to be for amusement.
Oh, it's a ride. The subway's already amusing, Dylan. I don't know when the last time you were on was.
All right, we're talking about so many bad cards. Let's move on.
Let's talk about another card. We're going to move on to green now and talk about Haunt Woods Shrieker.
Ah!
This is 1/2 green for a 3/3 creature beast mutant, and whenever it attacks, you manifest dread. And for 1 green, you can reveal target face down permanent, and if it's a creature, you can turn it face up.
This is a card that I probably should have put in the mono green coma deck that I'm building for our gameplay. I didn't put it in because if you're playing a ton of really huge monstrous creatures like I am in that deck, this feels like it's close to pretty good. You can spend like 2 mana to flip a giant thing.
That's what makes it good. Yeah, you cheat on that mana cost to basically cheat things into play. Makes it really good with like your top deck tutors. If you can even Sylvan Tutor then attack, this sets you up for a really good turn to get something into play for cheap that doesn't have an ETB trigger. I guess like Terastodon's a little bit worse because you just flip it. It doesn't
actually enter. It is there in play. So it's not good with Thassa's Oracle if you're in console colors, but maybe it's better with Laboratory Maniac.
Question.
Yeah, go ahead.
What does this do to creatures that are transformed and have two faces?
What does it say? I think it says you turn it face up.
Reveal target face down permanent, and transformed creatures don't have face down or face up.
They're not face down. They are just on their other side.
Yeah. So I don't think this is really a CDH card, but I will say this gives me like a bucket list goal in casual. I want to like play an Ixodron and then put this thing down and slowly flip all of my own shit face back up.
It reads sort of like some CDH cards, but ultimately I don't think it'll get there. Maybe in low color green decks. I'll give it a one.
Yeah, I'll give it a one. Sure.
Speaking of Kona, our next card is Kona Rescue Beastie. Yeah. This is 3 green for a legendary creature beast survivor. And it has survival at the beginning of your second main phase. If Kona is tapped, you may put a permanent card from your hand onto the battlefield. And this beast is a 4/3.
I was spending way too much time tweaking this deck yesterday. It's kind of fun and interesting. There's a bunch of lands and creatures that allow you to tap a creature to make a color of mana. So I'm playing a lot of those with the thought of like going turn 2 coma and tapping it right away for mana or something, and then just put something horrifying into play, a Void Winnower, or there's so many other things in this deck that are just like really only good in this deck. And I'm a little bit of a fear that if it doesn't do its thing, it's going to do nothing and it's going to look terrible. But when it does do its thing and I get to put a Terastodon in play on turn 2 or a Vorniclex or any of these, what's the Gargoyle, the 9 mana 4/5 Gargoyle, counters the first non-creature spell everyone plays, fuck yeah, put that one in. So I don't know, but there does seem like there's a lot of ways that I can just basically ramp to 4 mana, which is infinite mana in this deck, which is kind of interesting.
That is interesting, yeah.
It's a really cool deck concept, for sure.
And I'm playing some like fun like Magda cards, like some of the lands that see play in Magda. That
Survivor's Encampment, yeah. I
think if I were to keep going with this deck, I'd probably cut a couple of them. There's one of them that's a land that comes in tapped. I think that one's probably bad. I think even some of the creature ones you have to wait a turn cycle for, those are maybe a little bit bad. But certainly I would keep some of them in. Most often you'll probably just be able to attack, you know what I mean? But waiting for the whole thing to go around, having the table communicate, everyone leave up a blocker, and then I get to my turn, I can't connect, my whole deck doesn't do its thing. So the lands I think are the best ones, like uninteractable. Yeah. It's a mana ability, they can't really do much. Now they can do something in combat and shit like that.
Even
but
those
it's just
creatures I still think will be pretty good, because like even turn 1 you go land just bear a sentinel, and then turn 2 you can go like land mana vault, cast your commander, and then be able to tap them right away to still like put something in on turn 2. So as long as you're getting something else into play on turn 2, then you're in great shape. But we could also name 50 other CEDH decks that if their commander dies they don't do anything, right? So like that kind of fits that tier 3 CEDH niche, I think. So I'm excited to see how this goes.
Do it. Name 50. All 50.
Name 50. Okay.
Let's go to the database.
Yeah.
No, off the top of your head.
When I compare it to other things in CDH, like Rock'Sai, Rock'Sai also has put something into play that's really good on turn two. It's like an ad nauseum, and they normally win the game. With this deck, I'm not winning the game. I'm just putting a Void Winner in play on turn two.
Technically, that could also win you the game, but it wins you the game like seven turns later after you deal 120 damage.
Exactly, which like can be not so good, but it's super fun to Goldfish, so I'm hoping that it does something in the game.
I'm excited to see this, yeah. I think I'm going to give Kona a 3.
Yeah, I think it's a 3. I think it is a tier 3 deck. I think it could see play if someone really loves this commander. I think they could do something with it, so I'll give it a 3.
I think maybe I'm at a 2.5 on this, but like it's very cool. Let me say that. I love this style of card. I think it is like sort of viable mono green, but it's probably not better than our existing Savala type decks.
Yeah, when I started building it, I looked at actually your Kinnan list first to like see, like make sure I get all like the green and colorless fatties, and I didn't realize that you put in the fight spell land, the +2/+2 in fight on a land.
Bridgeworks Battle.
Yeah, how do you like it so far in Kinnan? Is it playable?
I very rarely cast it as Bridgeworks Battle, but yeah, I like having the option. It feels pretty good, and because I have Force of Vigor back in, having more cards that pitch for green,
that's true.
Very important.
Yeah, I think that's true. Yeah, it's just kind of the downside is so small. Why not? Like 3 life, who cares? So it's still an untapped land.
Walking Closet and Forgotten Cellar are our next cards. They're 2 cards smushed into 1 because it's a room. It's an enchantment room. You can cast either half, and then that door unlocks on the battlefield. The door to that room, to that enchantment, that's flavor. That's what that means. As a sorcery, you can pay the mana cost of the locked door to unlock it. So basically all that means is you cast one side and later you can pay mana to cast the other side too.
And judges are really excited that there's not going to be confusing at all when there's a card on the battlefield and one half might be active and it might not.
Might not be, yeah.
You're not casting the other side though, are you? Are you just unlocking the door? Is that an activated ability?
I feel like it's actually not going to be an activated ability. It's going to be more like a special action.
Is it a special action?
It's unlocking a door.
To me, that feels like an activated ability of an enchantment.
But there's nothing for you to activate.
The mana cost, but it's not where the activated ability normally is.
So
but
you're
it's in
thinking
the mana cost.
Because Morph is a special action, right?
I think yeah, this, maybe is it like Morph? Headset.
But because this is like, as a sorcery, it doesn't feel that much like Morph.
Once a room is on the battlefield, you can unlock the other half as a sorcery, but paying the locked half's mana cost. Unlocking a door this way is a special action that doesn't use the stack and can't be responded
interesting.
To.
Interesting. Okay.
That is very speed, interesting. But doesn't use the stack. That's wild. Okay.
Sorry. So we actually read what this card does?
So Walking Closet is 2 and a green for an enchantment that lets you play lands from your graveyard. And Forgotten Cellar is 3 and 2 green that says when you unlock this door, which is either when you unlock it or when it enters, you may cast spells from your graveyard this turn, and if a card would be put into your graveyard from anywhere this turn, exile it instead. So this is a little bit better now that we kind of know that it's a special action, because early on in the game, you can for 3 mana cast your Walking Closet, get a little bit of value, and then when you're ready to kind of like Yawgmoth's Will your graveyard for the win, your Yawgmoth's Will is uncounterable. Your Forgotten Cellar can just go off for your 5 mana, and now you can just start ripping through your graveyard. That's way better than I originally thought this would be.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. The 3 mana for a permanent that lets you play lands from your graveyard, the Ramunap Excavator, the Crucible of Worlds. The only deck that sees play that FX he's playing right now is the Gitrog Monster, and it's not really a deck that sees a ton of play. But like you said, knowing the special action is huge. Yawgmoth's Will lets you get lands back, gets one more land drop if you haven't played it. This is only cast spells, which is a little bit different. But
you still get to play a land from your graveyard with Walking Closet. They're both unlocked,
yeah,
right?
They're both unlocked at the same time.
So you're
right.
Still getting the land anyway.
It is the same. Yeah, it is the same. I really do think Gitrog Monster really wants this effect. I don't know what else wants this, but I don't know. It feels close. It feels like 2 things that are close. Yeah.
It's like it feels like you're almost like casting a silence before your Yawgmoth's Will. So it's still a little bit more expensive than that, but I'm kind of thinking of it that way. Like for a more protected Yawgmoth's Will, I have to jump through a bunch of hoops. I don't know what deck wants to do that, but I think that makes it a 2.5.
It felt to me kind of close in Korvel just because it cares about fetches so much more and being able to reuse fetches is very good. But like, I think the mana cost is still too high even then.
Nauz sees this as 8, right? Like this is an 8 mana spell if Ad Nauseam hits it. I think normally in this situation,
both.
It's both.
That's pretty.
Unless rooms are different, because that is another thing that kind of holds it back. If you're in Ad Nauseam, this is a lot for that. This is also weak to like permanent removal. So like someone can like Abrupt Decay this early on and make it so that you can cast your Yawgmoth's Will. That's something to think about too.
Yes, but
because
the action can't be responded to, I just think people are very unlikely to Abrupt Decay the first half. You know what I mean? And once you activate the ability for the second half, once you unlock the room, since that can't be responded to, you do have access to your graveyard to try and protect it or interact with anything removing it.
And you abrupt decay this, though, when it's on the first half? What's its mana value on the battlefield?
I have no fucking idea.
Runes work just like split cards. When you cast a rune spell, the mana value of that spell is the side that you choose to cast.
Okay, and this is three, so you can abrupt decay when it's
no,
on.
No, that's just the mana value of the spell, not of the permanent.
So that's if, like, we're playing Vile Smasher.
Yeah.
And we cast a three mana side, then it's a three mana spell.
Oh, what is it when it's in play?
However, something like Dark Confidant counts for both sides
which
together.
Ad nauseum would also, I think. It's the same thing.
Because you're looking at the card as a whole as opposed to what it is on the stack and what the spell is on the stack.
I think that means that ad nauseum definitely sees it as eight then.
On the stack, they have the mana value of the door you cast. On the battlefield, they have the combined mana value of the unlocked doors.
So you cannot abrupt decay this one when it's in play on
just
the
battlefield,
side.
They have the combined mana value of the unlocked doors.
Didn't you just say that?
No, of the unlocked
doors. Of just the unlocked doors.
I did just say that, but okay. I wanted to emphasize it's just the unlocked door. So until you open up the other door, it is still abrupt decayable, but you can counter the abrupt decay by unlocking the other door?
Sorcery speed only.
Sorcery speed only, so you can't. Okay, okay. Never mind.
We're spending way too much time on this card that might not see a ton of play.
Yeah, everywhere else at CMC is both sides combined.
Good to know, though. I give it a two.
Yeah, for the two.
I don't think it'll actually see play. Two sounds right.
All right, we got five more cards to go through here. We got the Jolly Balloon Man next. This is one, a red and a white for a 1/4 legendary creature, human clown with haste. And for one in tapping it, you can create a token that's a copy of another target creature you control, except it's a 1/1 red balloon creature in addition to its other colors and types and has a flying and haste. Sacrifice it at the beginning of the next end step. Activate only at sorcery speed.
Was that like a 99 red balloon?
Yeah, show? That was.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
This is almost a Kiki Jiki in the command zone. You can kind of make your own Kiki Jiki. If you have Village Bellringer and a creature that taps for mana, then you can make infinite creatures and attack that way. This works kind of well with a lot of other Kiki style cards. It doubles your dock sides. The haste with that is pretty nice. It doubles anything that you want to double. I'm not sure if it'll see play a ton after this, but it's what we're playing for this weekend. I think it's got some potential. It does a lot of cool things with other good cards in CDH.
The list looks really cool. I think I would give it probably a 2.52.
Yeah, getting to do a, what's the removal spell? Sky Shroud?
Skyclave Apparition?
Skyclave Apparition. Being able to do that every turn, repeat that every turn is pretty nice. You can kind of control the board a little bit. I put like all like the Kiki lines in it, basically. All the other Kiki stuff, because they all kind of work well together.
Honestly, like, yeah, even just like copying your Combat Celebrant with this even seems okay, just to like helping get for extra damage.
And I mean, I know we already mentioned Dockside, but like all I could think immediately was like, what if you have this and Delny?
Yeah.
Like,
oh yeah.
Oh, dude,
that's
damn,
a lot. Yeah.
Yeah,
exactly. I give this.
Oh damn, dude. Yeah, Delny copies the Balloon Man's abilities.
No, it doesn't, because that's an activated ability.
Oh, and Delny's only like triggered ability. Yeah. Delny like kind of sucks a little bit.
Delny does not suck.
I gotta cut it from Blue Farm. This blows.
I think this card is good, but not incredible. I don't know that it's quite a 3, but it's maybe somewhere around a 2.5.
That's where I'm at.
Sounds
yeah.
about right to me. Yeah.
The Master of Keys is next. This is X and then white, blue, black for a 3/3 legendary enchantment creature, horror. It has flying, and when it enters, you put X +1/+1 counters on it and mill twice X. And each enchantment card in your graveyard has escape, and the escape cost is equal to the card's mana value plus 3 other cards exiled from your graveyard.
Don't get too excited. I tried. I was really excited by the idea of something that gives stuff in your graveyard escape, and I thought there must be like a lot of potential CDH combos here. There may be lines that I didn't find, but there were a lot of things that were dead ends that I expected were going to go somewhere. I was like, I am positive there is some line with treachery where I get to like cast treachery and control stuff and then sack it to a sack outlet and then escape the treachery and like alter of dementia or something. Nope.
Yeah. there's not a lot of things that sacrifice enchantments, right?
There's enchantments that sacrifice themselves,
yeah,
that
but,
can like get you
right,
some
like
stuff.
Seal of removal and stuff, but there's actually very few enchantments that like allow you to just sacrifice something for free. Like enchantments that are just an unlimited sacrifice outlet, the way Altar of Dementia or like a lot of the altars are. So I thought that there were going to be all sorts of neat combos with this, and I'm sure we missed some. Tell us in the comments, but like I had trouble finding really interesting ones. There's a few cool cool tech pieces with this, but...
Really, what I feel like is the easiest thing to do with this one is just infinite mana. Once you make infinite mana, you mill out your whole library and then cast, like, an Animate Dead on a Thassa's Oracle that you milled.
Yeah, you just escape it out of your graveyard, so it makes it super easy to find all the pieces once you mill everything.
Yeah, if you also cast it for X equals zero and just have it sitting on the battlefield giving your stuff escape, it makes, like, Traumatize, like, kind of a game-winning spell. It gives you Intuition Lines and Esper that you wouldn't normally be able to win with, because, like, as long as there's an Animate Dead in your graveyard and a Savines, like, you can put together a win.
You can buy back a Mystic Remora.
That's the like most more, obvious, you know, one to me. Yeah, there's a 2 and a blue enchantment that says when it goes to your graveyard, you get an extra turn. And so, like, there's ways that you can, like, on each of your turns, technically, like, buy it back from your graveyard. And then, like, if you have a way to sacrifice it, you can do that. There's a couple of, like, these really old enchantments that do stuff like that. But I think they just end up being, like, too cute and are really dead in a commander that I feel like a lot of the times you don't want in play. Like, you want it in your command zone so that when you go off with infinite mana, you can win the game immediately.
Yeah,
I feel like I really like your build, the direction you went with it, which is just like reanimate Abdel Adrian, make infinite mana that way, cast this, do the Thassa's Oracle thing that we talked about.
It works really well with the Abdel Adrian stuff because you already want Animate Dead as a combo piece, yeah, to make infinite mana, which is what you want for your commander, and your commander can help you cast Animate Dead, so it turns your entombs into kind of more live stuff. If you already have the threat in there, you can entomb Animate Dead into the graveyard and then cast it right there. So it, I feel like it really is great for that specific reanimator strategy. It does fill a lot of those holes. I don't know if it'll be a tier one deck. It won't.
No, but I think it is the best commander that we'll talk about.
Yeah.
I think it actually is also like the best card that we'll talk about too. I'm gonna give the Master Keys a 3.5.
I think it's a 3.5
because I think it's worse enough than like any Timna pairing and Esper that I would want to do, but I think there is enough tech with escaping and that's just such a powerful effect that I think the Master Keys is certainly going to do stuff.
I think it's a 3 with the caveat that there really might be an enchantment line that I just couldn't find that someone figures out that makes this like a little better than that, where there's a much more efficient line.
It kind of competes with Tivit and Xur and Timna Malkum, which are all like pretty solid, good Esper options in CDH. It's hard to compare, like, is it going to be as good as any of those? Kind of plays a little bit differently, so it's hard to tell, but it does something a little bit differently than any of those 3D decks. It leans much more in the reanimation realm, I think. So it'll be interesting to see. But this one does have the most promise to be an actual CDH deck, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
The last thing I think that's worth mentioning is that the build that I decided to go with for this was one that tries to win pretty quickly. In the meta CDH is in right now, I feel like that's the only one that's even remotely viable. But if we are ever back to like a very mid-rangey game, something that runs like all of the Smothering Tithes and the Trouble and Pairs and the, you know, Rhystic Studies, like all of the big enchantment like engines,
yeah,
and just like digs them out of the graveyard one by one, I think that's actually probably a very powerful Esper control deck. It's just, I don't think an Esper control deck is going to do shit right now.
Marnius, you just made me think of Marnius, of like if you're looking for an Esper commander that works well with Smothering Tithe, Marnius is also certainly that one. But yeah, we can move on. This one, it's the Mono Consultation with Silence in the deck. It's going to be good.
It's going to be great.
It's going to be great.
We have a second Val'Gavoth to talk about now. This one is the Harrower of Souls. This is 2, a black and a red for a legendary Elder Demon this time.
He was always an Elder Demon.
He's got flying, no more lifelink, but he's a 4/4 with ward, pay 2 life. Whenever an opponent loses life for the first time during each of their turns, put a +1/+1 counter on it and draw a card. This is like such a power down Obnixilis. It's so disappointing to like not have trample. Yeah, you get ward, but like you get it once per turn, and it's not even once per turn per player. It's just for that player whose turn it is. So it's still really good with Kitterick Parasite and the new Razorkin Needlehead, but it's still going to be worse enough than these two other newer Rakdos commanders between like Rakdos the Muscle and Obnixilis that I don't think it's really going to come outside of our what's the best Duskborn commander in CEDH.
Yeah, that makes sense. It does kind of read like it's just like a worse Obnixilis. Like the max that you're getting is 3 cards per turn with this, which is kind of strange to say. Like that does seem like it would be good as 3 cards per turn. But like
Obnixilis' ceiling is significantly higher.
Yeah. Maybe you can get these triggers off more consistently than you can with the Obnixilis triggers. Is there?
Yeah, because it's not only one. It's just loses life.
But you can't do anything on your turn to help get yourself more cards. That's the most disappointing part of this.
Right, and this doesn't combo with anything. thing, as far as I can tell.
No, there's
Nixle's
nothing.
Combos with all will be one.
And it only triggers for the first time. So there's nothing that's going to like keep this going. So in short, I think Vel'Koth is going to be a 0.5 because there's too many better options that are doing the exact same thing.
0.5.
Remember when we were talking earlier about how fucking crazy the ward cost was on the big mono black guy? This is the exact opposite. This is the most underwhelming ward cost
what
in the
is
world.
The ward? What is it?
Two life.
Two life. Oh, yeah. Nothing, then. Literal nothing. Yeah, nothing.
Marina Vendrell is next. This is a Wooburg commander that's a 3/5 human warlock. And when she enters, reveal the top 7 cards of your library and put all enchantments from among them into your hand and the rest on the bottom in a random order. And you can tap her to lock or unlock a door of a room you control, but activate that only at sorcery speed.
This is a food chain outlet. If you go through your food chain with Squee or Mistile Griffin or Eternal Scourge Lion to make infinite creature mana, and you can cast this over and over again, eventually get Purphoros in the graveyard that you can cast with this, right? How does it work?
You put it in your hand, and because Purphoros is a creature, you can use your infinite food chain mana to cast Purphoros.
Yep, and you just keep on going through your food chain line, and everyone takes the damage from Purphoros. So that's kind of neat. Food chain First Sliver can already do this because it cascades through everything and you don't need the Purphoros. You can just win the Thoracle. You could also put a Purphoros in that deck and that could also still work. So it kind of doesn't do anything new, but it does give you the desire to play Purphoros, a second win condition. I don't know.
Maybe that makes your Sliver deck worse because now you have to play Purphoros when as you didn't need to play Purphoros before.
That was why I didn't want to go with this one as the fourth deck for our round, is that it is like a strictly worse version of something else.
But it is something that you could do. So again, I think this would be another 0.5 because there's just better things in the format that are doing this better.
What do you think of this one?
Yeah, I mean, it's exactly what you said. If you want a worse but more interesting five-color commander, like, we get one every set.
Yeah, well, you certainly could play five colors of CDH cards in this deck, and you will absolutely win games, for sure.
A card that you cannot play five colors in.
Yeah, our last card is Marvin, Murderous Mimic. This is 2 mana for a legendary artifact creature toy. Marvin has all activated abilities of creatures you control that don't have the same name as this creature. And he's a 2/2.
Yeah.
I thought this could be something that's cool because just giving it all the activated abilities of things is really good. But I found that everything that this works with is just bad and not things I want to put in CEDH. If you're playing Marvin as your commander, Palladium Mirror and Pillapala will make you infinite mana, but you will still need a third piece to actually win the game, like Walking Ballista. Marvin gains the ability to tap for 2 mana and also gains the separate ability for 2 mana and untapping Marvin to untap for a mana of any color. So you can generate infinite. It's not that good. If you're playing Palladium Mirror and Pillapala and Walking Ballista already in your CEDH deck, you can throw this in. I don't know if there's actually any combos in CEDH now that like I'm interested in playing Marvin. Like, what makes Necrotic Ooze good is that the things don't have to be in play.
The only thing that I'm thinking about for this card is I think it actually might be a Sisse card. I'm not positive, but this can sort of give your future Bloom Tenders haste. If this comes in first, later you play Bloom Tender, you can use this to activate as the Bloom Tender and you can win normally right on the spot with Sisse. It's also a legendary that Sisse can find without needing much help because it's only 2 mana card. Agatha's Soul Cauldron basically does this effect already a little bit with being able to exile from the graveyard, but Agatha's Soul Cauldron can't do anything if the Bloom Tender is in your hand, whereas this is kind of like if you play this first and later you draw Bloom Tender, it can be really good there. I think it's close. I think it's almost a Sisse card. As a commander, dog shit. And in many other decks, I don't think it's very great, but I do think this is like in the realm of like what Sisse is looking for.
That's really interesting, yeah.
I don't think it does anything as a commander in CDH, obviously, but I will say I think this is a really cool card for casual. I might actually try and build this. I have a soft spot for colorless decks, and almost always they're just helmed by like a huge fucking Eldrazi, and it's like obnoxious to the whole table. And this is one where it might actually do something silly.
So. Yeah, I think the ceiling is high, and this is another one that can improve over time if they're get printed stuff that are just the wrong, like this has the text of a broken card. There just might not be something that's really available there for a few enough other cards investment, but I feel like this reads like one that could over time actually be very strong.
It just requires you to have like probably at least 2 other things in play for it to combo, so it can work well with the ham sandwich, but the ham sandwich is like 12 mana between a couple different cards and what you need.
Yeah, or like a Sisse and a Bloom Tender. Or like just a
or
couple
something
cards,
like that. You know what I mean? It could also just be like that simple too. But
I'm actually going to rate this one kind of high because of its Sisse potential. Again, I'm not positive that it's going to end up in a final version of Sisse, but I think it's worth testing in one of the best decks in CDH. And I don't know that we've said that about any other cards. So I'm going to give it like a 3.5.
That's really high. I'm going to go with the 2 because I think Demonic Council is a little bit worth testing more in a lot of other decks. So I'm going to give it a 2.
I'm giving this a 2.5 just to be a contrarian.
Well, what do you think of Duskborn? Oh my God, you almost had me calling it Duskborn.
Born. It's right? We're born in the dusk?
It should be Duskborn.
Born upon a dusk.
I was born in the dusk.
Born upon a dusk.
Yeah.
Do we want to do a recap of the 5 cards we think are the best?
Are there 5 good cards?
I think there's this little puppet,
the
Marvin.
The little puppet.
I think the Demonic Council is good.
The Needlehead, the Razorhead.
Needlehead is good. The Esper Commander is close. That was it? Was there anything that was above a 3 besides that?
The only thing that was above a 3 that's going to end up getting above a 3 is going to be the Master of Keys. Kona was a 3.
Kona was a 3. And there you have it. That's the top 5 cards in CDH from Duskmorn. Marvin, Kona, Master of Keys,
yeah. Demonic Council and Razorkin Needlehead, I would say, are the top 5.
It's a good top 5 for me.
Yeah, whatever.
Thanks so much for listening or watching. If you'd like to support us directly, you can do so on Patreon, like our $100 patrons.
Funko K, Sparky B, Insomnia, SC Phillip, Olden Groupie, Gecko 21, Caleb Ritchie, Zach Hartley, Reactive, Sean in the Ice, Mark Cirillo, Stormageddon, Luke Cook, Demon of Rosgrease, Peter Stewart, Cornell Wild, Uncle Butts, Nick Foles, Godo 9, Kwaja A. Hamid, Lauren Connell, and Baby G Bus.
If you want to pick up any of our merch, go to playtowinmtg.com.
This video is brought to you in part by Dragon Shield.
Make sure you use our affiliate code and PlayToWin5 for 5% off.
Follow us on TikTok, Twitter, and Instagram for more content.
Thank you so much for watching.
Bye.
Sleep well.
Roy Turner, Orjan, Mystic Muffin Man, Jacob Depp, Tyler Watson, Zachary Coulson, Tyler H., Mallcraft, Jabaha, Mace the Ace, Dalton Poteet, Hopo Ghost, Justin Mansolo, Jacob Depp, Jan Wildfang, Thomas Bueno, and David Nelson.
Nice.
You talk with your hands different than Dylan, because Dylan talks with his hands. Sometimes I say something he agrees with and he goes like this, and then you see his hand pop up in my shot real quick. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with it.
I didn't realize that I could actually do this.
Yeah. Dude, you can manipulate my shot in so many ways.
I can do a lot of things with this, knowing this information.
Yeah, right?